Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
First dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Life is a flower, ladies and gents. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Wales own a home draw in the playoffs, but Norway have failed. It's Wednesday, 17th of November. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Lars Simonsen.
And I'm Luke Moore.
Welcome one and all to the Football Ramble.
You go straight from rubbing it in to like me supposedly introducing myself in a jaunty manner. What sort of mental acrobatics do you expect from me, Speller?
Everybody's second favourite scandalous Scandi is back in the pod.
It's not a good day.
Big Lars is here.
It's a bad day.
I think it's fair enough that you fronted up after last night.
I mean,
I think you might not turn up.
I just feel sad because I feel I've made a lot of people watch this game who might otherwise not have done. I feel like a lot of people I've been telling this is going to be exciting.
Are you looking at one?
It was not that.
You're looking at one.
It was abysmal. Yeah. It was an abomination for man and beast.
Yeah. So forgive me if it sounds like I'm stamping on you while you're
down. No, that's fine.
But I think actually the Wales game is more important to
our listeners. Yeah, let's go. So let's go Wales. Let's go Wales. Fair enough.
Sorry, mate.
You something to look forward to,
Lars. Lost the will to live.
But to be fair, you think you'd be used to it.
God's sake.
Yeah, you shouldn't get used
to
that.
The Harry Kane of international football.
You shouldn't get used to failing. You shouldn't get used to not qualifying for World Cups.
It's been 20 years.
It's been 20 years.
Anyway, we'll do it in a minute.
But it's been a lot longer for Wales, hasn't it?
Yeah, 1958 for Wales.
What is it? What was it? 1998 for Norway? 1958.
We were at Euro 2000. I just bucked that out because we were so bad.
Yeah, you were. But we're talking about World Cups here, mate. Yeah. You leave your UEFA hat at the door. Put your FIFA one on.
Yeah.
It's free with other purchases.
All right, Johnny.
It's got gold thread in it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Pele's hair. Yeah. For those who remember that.
Diamonds.
Diamonds.
That's diamonds.
Blimey, we're going off track. Yeah. But yes, Wales drew 1-1 at home with Belgium, and they've secured a home playoff semi-final after holding the world's number one ranked side. One can forget that about Belgium.
I'm jealous of Wales.
Oh, yeah.
Well, for the obvious reasons, but also they have had, in sort of recent history, a tremendous ability to make the team more than the sum of their parts at international level.
Specifically 5 years ago.
Well, but also, you can go through player for player on that team sheet, and it's not, you know, it's not amazing. But there's so many players who seem to up their game when they play for the national team.
Well, we spoke about this.
Which just isn't something you see that often in modern football. There's an extraordinary connection between the teams and the fans. Mm-hmm. And I mean, Real Madrid fans and accountants might not like this, but I think the way you think about it, the fact that you have guys like Gareth Bale, who genuinely, obviously prefers playing for Wales to playing for his club. You don't see that often in modern football, and it's great, and I'm slightly jealous.
Yeah, well, he didn't even play last night, and yet he seemed fully engaged, which is even rarer. So
again, very much the opposite of what's happening.
It's the most engaged non-player since Lyndon Dykes wanted to travel with the Scotland team, even though he couldn't play.
Now you're talking. But that all does feed into Lars's point, that what Wales and Scotland, but we said this about England as well, what some of the home nations have done, and other countries as well, Belgium being one of them, of course, is getting that team spirit. Because you think to yourself, as an international manager, you borrow players.
Yeah.
Speaking not from experience, of course. You borrow players, you don't really have time to kind of shape them too much. Yes, of course your tactics can have a part and blah, 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 blah. You get that team spirit. Southgate talks about club, making it feel like a club atmosphere. And look what you can do.
Yeah, and I think you've got to do it. I think if you're, it's particularly important if you are what I would call a moderate international team.
Yeah.
So you need to, I believe we talked about this earlier in the qualification process. I think we talked about it in the context of Scotland, who obviously, as we said yesterday, have gone on to do really well. You need to stick in there when you need to stick in there. You need to turn your home stadium into a real fortress and generate an atmosphere. And you need to somehow work with a management team who can make you larger than the sum of your parts to actually tap into what it means to play for that team. Now, I think actually with Wales and Scotland and Ireland and Northern Ireland, talking about the kind of immediate proximity to where we are in England, it's actually fairly easy to do that. England have struggled to do that.
Yeah.
England have struggled to tap into what it means to play for England.
Yeah.
Just before Southgate came in, because they were bringing foreign managers, they kind of lost their way a little bit in retrospect, and now they've kind of tapped into that. Wales have been brilliant at doing that. It's no coincidence, of course. I don't want to kind of pop their balloon, and we are in the FIFA house today, not the UEFA.
Oh,
house.
Absolutely.
But if you would allow me just to pop down the bottom of the garden to the UEFA shed for a moment,
okay,
I'll come back to the FIFA house straight away. I promise.
Yeah. They are neighbours, standing there just waving hello.
They are neighbours.
Very, 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 very nice.
They're all in Switzerland.
Everyone gets on well
with the bank account.
I would say that it's no coincidence Wales have had a really great run of it since the Euros has been expanded. Right, it's been easier to qualify. They've been able to do so. They've done it on merit, but it's been easier.
Of course,
the World Cup isn't easier, and that's why this is such a big deal. What they did last night, I think that for Belgium as a unit, it's not that often, the same way it wasn't that often with the Scotland game the night before, that teams will go and play in that kind of atmosphere and go, bloody hell, this is a tough old gig. And Wales weren't intimidated by Belgium last night. They were really able to stick to their task. They had a good few chances of their own. Of course, they obviously scored. And I know Belgium changed players and Belgium had already qualified, blah, blah, blah.
It was a strong lineup.
It was a strong enough lineup,
wasn't it?
And I think they deserve a huge amount of credit for what they were able to do. And Rob Page deserves an incredible amount of credit as well. The way he was parachuted in, under the circumstances he was in. He's not really a big name with respect to him.
Yeah.
It wasn't a done deal. The players were going to respect him. And he's been able to tap into it and done brilliantly.
He has done brilliantly as well. A tough act to follow. Less said about that, the better, maybe.
Yeah. The other thing about the Wales in this group, so much of international football, and I guess we don't talk a lot about it because it's just kind of random, like the draws are your destiny, right? I mean, so much is down
to
what
deal. Yeah.
It is such a bit like seeding and the draws matter so much. And when this group was drawn, you figure Wales are probably the third best team here. Like, you'd have Belgium and the Czech Republic, because the Czech Republic are improving, as we
especially
saw,
with their
as
performance
we
at
saw
the Euros.
During the Euros, as we've seen from their club size recently, they're on the up a little bit. You'd have them as clear favourites to finish above Wales in this group, I think, and I hope that's not very disrespectful. So coming above Czech Republic in this group is a real achievement by Wales. It's very impressive.
And the Czechs are in the playoffs as well, but you're absolutely right. Roberto Martinez called the atmosphere in the ground last night a beautiful, hostile atmosphere. He also said, it's fair to say when Wales are at home, they've got an extra threat. I would say, without the crowd, that maybe we don't concede that goal. And I thought, Take responsibility, man.
I also, you're right. Nothing
to do with my tactics, mate. Look at all this lot. Yeah.
I also thought to myself, and managers are always like this, how easy it is to be gracious when you've already qualified.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Imagine, yeah. It often happens with Jurgen Klopp. They win so often, Liverpool, that when they lose, you think, bloody hell, Klopp's a bit spiky.
Absolutely right. Martinez, Klopp's a very good example of that.
This is basically just a trip to Wales for them.
I think Martinez, though, he's usually okay in defeat.
He's not bad.
I feel with Martinez, if you could hook him up to some kind of machine and turn his sort of positive vibes into electricity, a lot of this old climate crisis nonsense would be solved overnight.
Sustainable Martin.
Sustainable Robbie. We can just plug him in and he would power most of the China.
Well, he would with that little dance. Remember when he was at the, was it a Jason Derulo gig?
He's a stylish mover.
And you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Was it Derulo?
It was definitely that kind of artist.
Yes.
And someone filmed him without his knowledge and put it on the internet. Let's be absolutely clear.
So you framed that as quite naughty, but I think actually they've probably done him a favour.
Well, I think when he was...
Because he did a lovely little sort of reverse
great
wheel.
Move. It was a great move. And what happened was at the gig, he was in a beautiful, hostile atmosphere. And he had to puncture that atmosphere with a lovely little dance.
And I tell you what, if they'd have needed to qualify last night, we might have seen that on the touchline.
What I would say is this. If you are going to be caught on a long lens doing that and your team doesn't qualify, you're going to look like a prat.
You are.
So fair enough, he was able to do it.
Yeah.
I don't know how you feel about this, Lars, because you know a lot more about European football than me, but they're still calling this Belgium team this golden generation or whatever, even though they haven't actually won anything. I kind of understand that because of the profile of players they've got. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the coverage of Belgium going into the World Cup is almost like, and it has been, it probably was in the summer as well, this last roll of the dice idea.
We've been saying that for a little while.
Yeah. Did you see anything from the players coming through, the young players, that there's a little bit more life in the old dog yet?
I mean, in Charles de Ketelaer, they have a real player there. I mean, I think he's going to go very far. He's a delicious player. But there isn't, the defence issue is still an issue. I mean, I don't think...
The defender for the Wales goal was terrible, by the way.
Yeah.
So bad.
And there isn't obvious sort of youth candidates coming through there who will, like, they will clearly be the centre-halves to take them. And, you know, is the Alderweireld, Vertonghen, Vermaelen thing, like, age has come for them.
Company.
And, exactly. And that they've sort of... But I think with the golden generation thing... It still is, right? I mean,
you've got to look at this in context.
I think if we go through Belgian football history, like, I don't think you'll find any point in time where they've produced more top-class players who've done really well at club sides.
I completely agree.
And I think, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but they went out to the eventual champions this time around, no?
In World Cup 2018.
Yeah, that's right.
To France in the semi-final. Slender 1-0 victory.
And I mean... That's just kind of how tournaments work sometimes.
But I completely agree. I think sometimes I think the chat around Belgium can be a bit silly when people go, well, they haven't won anything. Well, there's plenty of sides over the years that haven't won anything, and we have great affection for them, or certainly the fans of those teams do. I think Belgium, again, as Lars says, you've got to remember where they are on the footballing map. The 86 side were handy in 1986.
Yeah.
1990, they were handy. Mm-hmm. England just about got past them, of course, and maybe a little bit fortunate to do so. But a country that size with the population, they don't actually have their national team a huge sort of... tradition, really. I say tradition. Obviously, there's
no,
keen interest.
But
in recent years, they have galvanised that support because a lot of Belgians used to go and watch France. Yeah. Or some of them would watch Netherlands because of the way they are geographically and culturally and so on. So the way they've kind of pulled it together, they've got to the number one spot in the world. I know you don't get a medal for that, but that's still a hell of an achievement.
Yeah.
They got third in the World Cup. A semi-final is probably better to say it. Yeah. Those fans will remember that. The quarter-final victory over Brazil, absolutely. Yeah. Shame for them in the Nations League. They didn't maybe get to the final, but I think to sort of write it off and say, well, this golden generation or whatever has failed, I think is a little bit short-sighted.
Yeah, they go out against eventual champions in 2008, and again, hopping off into the UEFA shed to hang out with Čeferin for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
They did go out to Italy at Euro 2000 in the summer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
So again, two international tournaments in a row, you go out to the eventual champions.
Yeah.
That's just how it goes sometimes. I mean, the draw is destiny.
Yeah. Very true, very true.
I mean, it's Wales' night, though, wasn't it? We should make that.
Well, it was Wales' night.
Well, who, of course, knocked him out of Euro 2016.
Absolutely.
But of course, eventual champions and Wales. There's no shame in going out against
them. No, exactly. Yeah,
they were against the force of destiny.
Exactly. Did you see that Joe Ledley announced his retirement at the weekend? Who's been a good servant for Wales. He finished his statement with, "Then there is Wales, my beloved Wales. I can never imagine retiring from international football, so I will forever remain available. Please don't take me home." I love that. you need a club side to play for international football?
It's like Nainggolan all over again.
Yeah, well,
it doesn't make you more likely to be picked, so that you're not going to play football anymore.
It's not quite like Nainggolan, is it?
True, yeah.
He's a bit more disciplined than Nainggolan.
I would rather smoke cigarettes and play in the second tier than try hard, but if you want me, Belgium, I'm here.
Yeah, or Dr. Socrates in Brazil.
Yeah.
You don't quit smoking, then you have to quit playing football.
All right.
Might as well draw me.
It's a great line. Next time I lose a job or something, I'm going to say, okay, that's fine, I get you, but I shall forever remain available.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd have that as your signature on your email last week.
I shall forever remain available.
But you can't use it on us. We now move on from the jubilation of
I don't
Wales.
Mind dropping this section. I mean, we have a running
Listen,
order here, but...
It's a bit like a tabloid newspaper. We're going to do the story anyway.
Yeah.
You want to give us your side of the story.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, exactly. We're giving you the option here, Lars. But we should talk about Netherlands 2, Norway 0, because Louis
Keep
van Gaal...
saying that.
Norway... Louis van Gaal's done it again.
Yeah, he has.
He's done it again. He said he would retire if Netherlands had failed to qualify for the World Cup. So Norway
He's tried retiring before.
Norway, as you said before, Lars, they missed out on the World Cup.
Could have retired. Yeah, come at the king, you best not miss.
Yeah.
He tried to retire. I found this quote. He tried to retire in March 2019, and he said, "My wife is also entitled to a life with Louis van Gaal, not just the players."
Yeah, but then I think crucially, his wife said, that, "Can you please just go back to work?"
Actually, I'd rather you be.
Just when he thought he was out, they pulled him back in.
But this was—I mean, Norway didn't even treat us to a kind of exciting sort of stuff because it was the group with, and I think we said this yesterday. I was looking forward to the games last night.
The most connotations.
Yeah, because there's a lot of drama.
A lot of weird stuff could have happened there.
And then Netherlands and Norway between them just absolutely killed it. The first half was enough to make you give up football.
Well, there was a moment in the first half when Montenegro had taken the lead against Turkey and we thought, hello, this could be an interesting night.
Yeah.
And then you looked back at the TV at Netherlands, Norway unfolding and you realised, well, maybe not. The first half... I can on a rational level, if I have to be serious for a second, I can understand the logic between going into this game and thinking, okay, we'll keep it tight, we'll
stay in the game.
I totally get that,
and that's totally what we were doing in the first half. And I think, to be fair to the Norwegian players, they were very, very structured and committed, and they were pressing, and we defended reasonably well. Like, the Netherlands didn't create anything of note in the first half either. But there is a fine line between staying in the game and just not doing anything, and. I think we fell foul of that. And again, when we eventually tried to push forward, there just wasn't anything there. And the frustrating thing is, listen, this isn't where the qualifying went wrong for us. We talked about how the draw is destiny. And actually, looking at this group, as much as there have been some weird twists along the way, Netherlands top, then Turkey, Norway, Montenegro, Latvia, Gibraltar. I mean, that's completely according to rank. That is probably what you would have expected. But because Turkey have had some troubles, we would have maybe felt we could have done something. But Ståle Solbakken, our coach, said after the game that, you know, the big problem for us in this group was that we lost our home game against Turkey, in inverted commas, which we had to play in an empty stadium in Malaga. It was very early in Solbakken's tenure. He hadn't had a chance to work with the team a lot. I think he made some tactical choices in that game that if he had his time again, he would do differently. So between that defeat and dropping points against Latvia, that was the two games that did for us. But the frustration after the Netherlands game is that I think this team could have done better than that. I think there are players who weren't able to show what they can do. And I'm looking at our midfield in particular, because I like our midfield. You know, Torsby and Norman looking after Ødegaard is a good balanced midfield, and they weren't able to impose themselves on the game at all. And when we did win the ball, we just didn't do anything. And there was a period in the early second half when we decided to push up a little bit and try to make life a little bit uncomfortable for them. And that kind of added to my frustration, because you saw that they were a little bit rattled, the Dutch. Like, they weren't that comfortable in possession when you repressed them. So it made me think that it's very easy to sit here in the studio and say we should have gone at them. But when we did try a little bit, I felt there was something there for us, but we just didn't do enough. Yeah.
But that's, I think that's the thing, Luke, is when you have these games where people say just stay in the game. Yeah. Absolutely, there's merit in that. But you know, as well as anybody who's watched football, is when you play and the dynamic sets in, it's solid. For the last 10, 15 minutes, you go, right, lads, switch it up now. Everyone's set in stone. Not set in stone, but it's set. It's very difficult to get out of that. And as you say, with Norway, it's kind of like, as I said, there's little chance of having a go, but it just, nothing.
Some people would probably have the take that, you know, you've just got to go and play your normal game. You've got to say, look, you know, this is the best team, the best players and the best formation and tactics to go out and win a game. And whatever the circumstances, this is the opposition we're playing. This is how we go about it. I don't know if they did that because I don't watch Norway enough to know if it was a big change. But they did stay in the game for 84 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I mean, you know, and my friend Tommy, who's, a, you know, he's Dutch and he's a big fan of the Netherlands national team. He was messaging me throughout the game saying, look, this is Netherlands we're talking about here. We're cutting this way too fine. We can't be doing this. And then when Bergwijn scores, which I'd love to see if you're on the same wavelength as me on this, Marcus. What goal? What famous goal from history that reminds you of?
Well, that sort of Emil Heskey.
No, for me it was exactly like the goal that Shearer scored against Netherlands.
Oh,
in
Netherlands! It was.
That's the top corner.
Sorry, I was thinking Heskey away to Derby. I think, but
random.
Yeah.
I can't even remember that.
Yeah. I don't know why that popped in my mind. No, you're right. It was that sort of. Yeah.
And so listen, it will go down as a 2-0 defeat for Norway. It's disappointing for them, but the second goal is the second goal, right? I mean, they had no one back. They were trying to get forward to get a goal.
You can't stop Depay. He'll always help himself to one. Him and Harry Kane, top scorers.
He will always have a piece of Depay.
Very piece of the pie. Generous from Bergwijn.
You maybe not notice that.
Bergwijn laid on a slice.
What I was doing, Luke.
Yeah.
But you both ran for the same ball there, but you both scored at the
same
time.
You'd rather both went for none of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, in the combined 11 between these two teams, I mean, maybe you'd have Ødegaard for the Netherlands.
It's just excuses, isn't it? We just talked about Wales a second ago. It doesn't matter.
I mean, but that's the point. That's why I'm saying I was slightly jealous of Wales because they're clearly more than some of their parts.
Yeah.
And I think last night we weren't. Now, I do think I like the coach. I think Ståle Solbakken is a smart guy. I think I've said this a few times before. I think he's the best coach out there with a Norwegian passport, which is a very thinly veiled day to get someone else. And I think there are good players in this group. And I do think we have a very fair chance of qualifying for the next Euros, unless we get stuffed by the gods of the draw. But this game was a bit of a setback, we have to say.
When do you think it's time for Solskjaer to take the Norway job?
Never, not ever.
No, is this why you've been really positive about him staying in the main job? Think he's the man for the job?
I'm being harsh. I mean, I think it's possible that he could actually be good for that role because I think he has a good rapport with the players, and I think that's a big deal in international management.
You were quick to dismiss him.
That was for effect, Marcus.
Yeah. Well, they didn't make the playoffs, of course, as you say there. Some of the teams did. I mean, you say Norway is a small country. Russia is the biggest country on earth, and they're in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So sometimes
what have we
does...
learned there, Marcus?
Russia big, Norway less big.
Exactly. North Macedonia changed their name recently.
Yeah.
Added in the north. They're there.
Are we seeing patterns?
Maybe. I'm trying to. Czech Republic tried a sort of a rebrand to call themselves Czechia.
Yeah.
Didn't really take on here.
Czechia. That's what we call Czech Republic anyway in Norway.
Right?
So for me, this is easier.
Blimey. So they spent a lot on posters.
Just
and
because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not after you, mate.
Absolutely right. Yeah. So the seeded teams, of course, Portugal, Scotland, Italy, Russia, Sweden, Wales. Unseeded teams, Turkey, Poland, North Macedonia, Ukraine, Austria, Czech Republic. It's a strong draw. But then I think we're saying this because with the Euros, it is more of an open tournament because of the number of teams that can qualify.
I think so. I think that's my big galaxy brain theory about this. Because over this week, certainly, it's felt like, oh my God, that team's in the playoff? Yeah. Like, good Lord. But I think it's just because we've been through a Euro cycle where basically everyone gets to the Euros, except for Norway, obviously, but like literally half the teams in Europe qualify, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And that means the qualifiers are, you know, for quite a few teams, once you get a few wins on the board, the rest of it is kind of fine. But the World Cup draw is still pretty brutal. There aren't that many spots for Europe in there.
I'm assuming you're champion Arsene Wenger's ideas then, because Norway can get involved a bit more.
Getting to see Arsene.
Well, you said Norway could have doubled
the mer.
Indeed, yeah.
It's a tough old... Sorry to cut you.
Yeah,
old...
Choquez-vous dans la mer.
It's a tough old draw. 12 teams into three.
Yeah.
And the finals, the three games at the finals, that's whoever plays at home is done by a draw.
Yes.
So, I mean, back to Lars's point about how we have to, you know, make an offering to the draw gods if you're a Scottish fan or a Welsh fan or whatever. I think Scotland and Wales should be very, very happy they're in that pot one.
They should be, and I'm sure they are. I do sort of, part of me does think that if you do qualify through the playoffs, because it is like a semi-final, you should get a medal, but then you shouldn't get a medal for qualifying. Do you know what I mean? So I'd be sort of a bit mixed emotions there.
I just think you're wrong.
Yeah, okay. Serbia have made it through to the World Cup. That's what we know. I just wanted to mention because their players were given a €1 million cash bonus for qualifying for the World Cup. They donated to the treatment of sick children in Serbia.
Very nice.
Good
well
lads.
Well done then. Well
good
done them, then. Yeah. Just to finish the first half, gentlemen, let's go to North American qualifying for the World Cup. Canada defeated Mexico 2-1 to go top of the qualifying group. Now, Canada...
They're flying.
They are absolutely flying.
Yeah.
They're like a maple leaf in the wind.
Yeah.
They are...
What?
So that kind of feels like they're being blown around all over the place.
They're like a moose on the slopes. I don't know.
Like
I don't
a
know.
Moose on the slopes. They're just hanging around like a charging moose.
Exactly.
Going straight towards.
They're like a mountie striding
a
along
with
a
malfunctioning rifle.
I love our Canadian listeners have got about 5 seconds of enjoyment out of that before they just got stereotyped into oblivion.
What they're going to do? Be rude to us? It's unlikely because they're a fine bunch.
Yeah, they are lovely.
But this game was played at the wonderfully so-called Ice-Tekka Stadium in Edmonton.
Yeah.
With wind chill, it was minus 14 degrees.
Yeah.
If you're going to play it, take the Mexicans up there. They won't be used to that weather, might argue. One Canada player did a dolphin dive into a snowdrift when celebrating the second goal, which is wonderful
stuff.
Big fan of it. Wonderful stuff.
I am absolutely astonished that you can be Canadian and not realise that diving into snow is far more painful than it looks.
No, but it's good. It's refreshing.
You're talking to a Norwegian.
It's very good. Do you know Alex Tetti once celebrated a goal by making a snow angel?
Yeah, but let's talk about
very
types
good
of snow.
Lad.
Lars, there's types of snow. There's types of snow.
That's true,
The hard packed snow that's been taken off the pitch and piled in big things is going to be tough.
Ah, that's true.
But I mean, he'd been running around, so he was quite sort of het up and he wanted to...
Excited.
Yeah, exactly right.
I mean, shout out to John Herbman, doing a brilliant job there. I mean,
it's
incredible. He's moved across from the women's team. He's done a brilliant job with the men.
Could you give me his full name?
Proud Englishman John Herdman. Yet further evidence of England's influence on the game. Is that what you want?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Quite astounded to see Atiba Hutchinson still knocking around. A midfielder for Canada, who I'm familiar with a little bit because he played in Scandinavia for a while. Mm-hmm. And he's 38, which is like a 38-year-old central midfielder still doing the business, still playing regularly for Besiktas. Great career. Well done.
Yeah, no, we do enjoy that. Also, in the North American qualifying, check out Mikel Antonio's goal against the US.
Oh, my God, I love this.
What a hit.
Did you see that his teammate tried to celebrate by booting the ball back into the net again, missed the ball, and fell over?
Yeah. Did see that.
Great stuff. Mikel was probably like, what am I dealing with here?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there was a very muted celebration. I was almost worried that he'd twanged something because he didn't run around like a madman. But
he's got a track record as
maybe
well.
This is my favourite type of goal. Is the kind of goal where you can see it's far out, you can see what the player is about to do, and you have just about enough time to say, no, don't be shooting from there, you moron. And then he does, and then it goes in.
Yeah.
It's very high on my list of favourite type of goals in the world.
It is a glorious goal. I do hope Canada qualify, though, from this.
Same. First time since 1986.
First time since 1986. I find that odd that Canada have been at the World Cup before.
And some legit good players there, like Jonathan David of Lille is very good. Alfonso Davies obviously is a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. You know, Kai Larin, Besiktas forward, is a good striker. Yeah. You know, I think, they
Greg Ruzetsky.
Thomas Radzinski.
It's time for a break, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Hi, I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
And I'm Chloe Morgan.
Join us every week on our brand new show, Upfront, on Football Ramble Presents. We'll get stuck into the biggest stories in women's football every Tuesday, from the latest in the WSL. Gareth Taylor said, oh, well, actually, we were playing 3-4-3, and we moved to 4-4-3-3. If you look at any of the footage, if you look at the way the players played in that first half, there were four players playing at the back. That sort of comment speaks of a manager who doesn't quite know what they're doing.
To how the Lionesses are shaping up ahead of a home Euros next summer. For me, I would pick Lea Williamson. I would just go for it now. For a younger age captain, you've got some big tournaments coming up. I think a lot of players think she's got a really great mentality, gets on with a lot of people. For me, she's a born leader, and I think she will be England captain at some point.
And what it's really like being a player in women's football today.
From my own experiences of being in a situation like that, I mean, you know, when we got promoted when I was with Spurs, that was phenomenal. I was, you know, first choice keeper. You know, then you go into the WSL for our first season, and all I wanted to do was get WSL experience.
Join us every Tuesday for Upfront. Search Football Ramble Presents in your podcast app. Subscribe now.
Football Ramble Presents is a Stack production.
You better get your finger out, all right, and make sure that you get their fucking results.
Welcome back to Football Ramble, everybody. Yeah, you got to make sure, Lars.
You do.
You've got to make sure. Right.
Greg Rosetsky.
Oh, dear. It's Wednesday. Oh, that means it's time for Pep Talks.
We are so, so happy. We're so happy.
We are so happy. Yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy for them.
We are so happy.
I'm so happy, believe me.
I'm so happy.
Sit down! Nobody talk! Sit down! Drink water and relax.
Welcome to Pep Talks, everybody.
Drink water and relax.
sorry, Pep.
I think he should do like relaxation tapes.
Yeah.
And go, ooh, relax.
You get them on the car map. You can get them on the car map.
Relax.
Yeah.
Can you really?
No.
Oh,
sit down.
Yeah.
There we are. Lars, I believe you got the email.
I do. We've got an email from Brian who says, I've just had a second child a couple of weeks ago, a baby boy. That makes it 2 under 2 brackets. Shitting myself is an understatement. Fair enough, Brian. However, my daughter, who is 18 months old, has now decided that this is the perfect opportunity to start waking up at 5 a.m. Not ideal. The only way I can see to solve this is to play incredibly boring games of football on the TV in the hope that she will hate this and sleep until at least 6 a.m. Now, my question for you is, what games should I make her watch? Or do you have another idea on how to bore her into sleeping better? Interesting, Brian. Yeah. I say, waking up early, good habit for life. Very I mean, I speak as someone who's very bad at that. You know, I'm very efficient people, so maybe you should encourage it. But it's bad for you, obviously. I have to say, topically, first half of Netherlands-Norway from last night.
Well, I was going to suggest.
An incredibly strong candidate. That those 45 minutes. In the second half...
Yeah.
You know, there was a risk of a football game breaking out. Yeah, I mean, it never truly did, but, you know, there was something almost happened.
Yeah.
Whereas in the first half, that was just bilge. Like, there was just terrible.
Totally.
It was a team that had no intention of playing football versus one that was a little bit worried of about trying.
Yeah.
And it was a complete waste of time.
A classic of the genre would be Austria versus West Germany.
Yeah.
In 82, was it?
Well, they did that on purpose. And basically stimulated a change in the rules because they played out a 0-0 draw because both of them qualify.
Yeah, did they screw over Algeria, was it?
I can't remember. It was a bit before my time.
That would be a good one. And another one of a classic of the genre of games which
promised so much and was just terrible was Manchester United versus Liverpool. I think it was the 1996 FA Cup final.
Cantona winner.
A lot of Manchester United Liverpool games in this bracket.
Yeah, you could have that, but that cup final, everyone's like, oh my god, two massive teams, it's going to be huge, and it was terrible. Just pause it before the Cantona goal goes in, because obviously there's a bit of titillation there.
But looking at it, I mean, we remember from a school days on an exam, the key is to read the assignment properly, right? So yeah. We're looking at Brian's email here, and I've got it in front of me. It's about putting, you know, something that's so dispiriting that the child just goes,
I'm not having this.
I'll just go back to sleep instead. I'm thinking England's 2010 World Cup campaign.
Oh, yes!
Yeah.
Almost everything that happened. You'll be able to get that on stream as well, probably.
Totally.
So bad. And it's appalling football-wise. It was terrible. Also, you've got, I'm sorry if you like this, but it's not for me. The Vuvuzela's in the background as well.
Mm-hmm. That'll send you to sleep for sure.
Babies
like white noise and stuff
if they
like
do,
that,
yeah. I mean, that would really help. I certainly think this is not for me. Like, I'm prepared to go back to sleepy land.
Well, listen, you guys,
I think that's the answer.
I think they're all great answers. I like any excuse to bring up Portsmouth 0, Gillingham 0, New Year's Day 2001, which I still remember now, despite it being over 20 years ago, was the worst game of football I've ever seen, followed by a poor home defeat to Wigan at Fratton Park under Alan Perrin. I forget what year that was. But thankfully, you're very unlikely to be able to have to come into contact with the videos of those games because they're either too long ago or no one gives a shit about them. So you're probably, that's not really a realistic candidate, but that's certainly, I think me just telling your newborn about that would send them back to sleep.
Yeah, I agree.
So anyone,
it certainly made me lose focus.
Yes, absolutely.
Brian, started zoning out.
Brian, I think you've got your answers there. So good luck with finding footage of those games. If you've got any questions for us, however bizarre, send them in and we will get to them every Wednesday for Pep Talks. Show at footballramble.com or tweet us at footballramble. By the way, talking of boring games, I'd just like to bring in a great game that happened last night with the Bristol Rovers in the FA Cup.
Incredible
scene. That was absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah, so Bristol Rovers went 3-1 down in extra time. So it was 1-1, went to extra time. They went 3-1 down, and then they scored three goals in extra time. So there were five goals in extra time, and they scored three goals in 8 minutes to win 4-3. And the winning goal,
oh, man.
The scenes were absolutely incredible. We'll have to share it on social media for those who haven't seen it.
A proper pile.
Absolutely unbelievable stuff.
People just started just coming from everywhere. It's just one of those moments you get everybody down there.
People who don't even work here. The bloke from the Sainsbury's.
Yeah, are you into football? Not really. That'll do. Get over there.
But I do feel for Oxford United fans because they were the team on the wrong end of the result. And it's a Tuesday night. They've got to drive back to Oxford. It's like losing in that fashion.
Sure.
They're the kind of trips back. And I'd love to hear from someone if they drove back from that game with who supports Oxford United with their mates. Those are the kind of drives back that cement your friendships forever.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, we have got shared trauma here and we are never going to forget this. So incredible credit to Bristol Rovers. Brilliant scenes. Definitely check out the video if you've not seen the winning goal. And huge commiserations to Oxford United.
Up the gas. Mm. Up the gas. Mm. All right, gentlemen. Let's go to something that is quite a sad story from football. Derby County. Yes, they've had... yesterday they were deducted a further 9 points after admitting to breaches of the EFL's accounting rules over the sale of their ground, Pride Park, to former owner Mel Morris. Now, this charge had initially been brought in January 2020, but Derby's appeal against their previous 12-point deduction has also been dismissed as well. So they've now got a 21-points deduction with a further suspended 3 points hanging over them. They're 18 points adrift of safety on negative 3 points at the moment. They haven't been relegated to the third tier since 1985-86. So it's a proud club, of course, that we know that. But if people think, oh, well, are they one of those sides that knock around the sort of the lower leagues? No, they've not been to the third tier for a very, very long time.
They've only spent four seasons outside the top two leagues in their entire history.
Yeah. So this is just such a desperate situation. But we've known this for a while with Derby, and it doesn't really surprise.
The bad news is that, as you've described it, I mean, obviously, points deductions are terrible for the obvious reasons, but also because they demotivate the players and they demotivate the fans and you know, the people who are being punished aren't necessarily the people who've committed the crime. And I speak as a fan of a club who's been through this.
You know it.
The good news is, I think, from what I can make out, they can at least draw a line on this now and say, right, this is the punishment. This is where we are with it.
The not knowing is sometimes worse.
Exactly.
What I mean.
And we've got to move on. Now, there's also further good news, I think, because there are, if accounts are to be believed, and there's been some great reporting on this, there are people lined up who want to buy the club.
Apparently so.
And if that's the case, then hopefully they can come out the other side of it. I know that Wayne Rooney's getting... I don't know Wayne Rooney personally, obviously. I do know a couple of people at Derby County, and they're very positive in their praise for Wayne Rooney, what he was able to do after Philip Cocu was there. Mm-hmm. The fact that he stuck with the team and really wants to work with the players. He's got a real affinity with the group. I think he believes in them a lot, and they believe in him. And for a player who's not played at that level or managed at that level before, it's kind of interesting that... that he's sticking at it, and mm-hmm. and you know that they've been competitive. Though.
Yeah,
no one's suggesting they've been brilliant, but the circumstances around mm-hmm. the club have been hard, and yet they've been competitive. Now, very very quickly to finish, if there is someone lined up to buy the club, and they do so, they also need to sort out the ground situation mm-hmm. because Mel Morris, the previous owner, the incumbent owner, whoever he is, whatever he is now, I can't quite remember. He owns the stadium.
Yeah.
They've got to sort the stadium and the ground situation out as well, because otherwise their problems may not go away as quickly as we'd hope. But ultimately, hopefully they can draw a line under it. They can move on. They obviously need to take their medicine. We'll wait and see for the rest of the season what happens. But there is kind of hope for the future for Derby now, I think. And I speak as someone, like I say, who support Portsmouth. It's awful to go through all this stuff. But Portsmouth did come out the other side of it, and Derby will as well.
Yeah.
They did that classic... club in financial trouble move a few years back, didn't they, of selling their own stadium to themselves?
Quite. And that's been part of the problem.
Well, yeah, which is, I mean, there's a Norwegian saying that comes to mind, like, if you're out in the cold, pissing yourself to stay warm.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Very nice.
It can work in the extreme.
That's weirdly poetic.
Yeah, yeah.
It's short term.
In the short term, it can have a positive effect, but the long term effects are very much negative.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So I don't recommend that.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, for Derby, you know, To be hopeful, you're right. If they get a new owner in who starts to kind of sort it out, they're probably going to get relegated.
But yeah, they need to massively up their points per game to give themselves a chance.
Yeah, but again, though, we've seen big clubs and bigger clubs than Derby go down to League One or the third tier. And actually, again, if all goes well, yes, you don't want to stay there, but you get a bit of money, you keep a few players and whatnot. You might feel like the biggest club in the world in League One, because if you get that
going... But that comes with its own problems, Marcus.
It does.
Sunderland have seen that. Portsmouth have seen that.
Sure.
It's difficult. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult. But I mean, when Portsmouth were in League Two, it was much tougher than you'd expect.
Yeah.
Because every single... I don't mean to be disrespectful. Portsmouth and Derby are a big club.
Yeah.
Every single game's like a cup final to the other teams. Mm. They're going to Pride Park. Pride Park will have... 18, 20, 22,000 people in it.
Yeah.
And it's a big day out for smaller teams. Mm-hmm. And it makes it hard because they really dig in. They really try hard. It's almost like Man United in the 90s, although they were able to take care of it because they used to win all the time. But it's a shit analogy. But the other thing I was going to say, just on the players' point, you make a really interesting point there, because one thing I didn't consider is I think a lot of Derby's players are out of contract in the summer.
Mm.
So that'll be a real tipping point for them as well. They need to improve massively in terms of the points they're picking up if they're going to stay in this division. But, yeah, I mean, ultimately, sometimes you've got to take a short-term hit for the long-term kind of benefit.
Totally. I mean, I'm trying to be hopeful there, but you're right. When you think about the players, I mean, they hardly had any players recently. A lot of them are out of contract. It could be a very desperate situation, but you never know in football, Lars.
You never know.
I feel like, I mean, there are rules in place, but I'm starting to think there needs to be more stringent financial controls on the Championship.
Whoa! What an amazing
Lars, come on!
Just because it's such a basket case financially, and I understand why. It's because clubs and owners take short-term punts on just spending more money than they have, thinking if you get promoted, then happy days.
Jobs are good. And they were close. Derby have been close in recent years.
Yeah, and I guess for owners' sake, if it doesn't work, they can just leave and the club will be left to sort out the financial mess, right?
Indeed.
And that just shouldn't be possible, I think. And again, it comes back to something we've spoken a lot about this year, about how football clubs should be seen as community assets rather than just businesses.
I agree with that.
And there should just be more controls in place.
Mm-hmm. Sadly, that ship has sailed, I'm afraid.
Indeed, yeah. But with that kind of point of view, Lars, you wouldn't be very welcome in Major League Soccer. They're not community hubs, are they, really? No.
Well, it's a bit disrespectful to Fizzer, that.
Is it?
Very disrespectful to the great man.
Well, let's go back to
a one-man community.
Let's go back to North America.
Okay.
You've twisted my arm.
The link work is pretty extraordinary.
Is it a community or is it a franchise? You know, that's the.
I mean, if you want to have a serious conversation about this,
not particularly.
I know exactly. What yeah. I had a feeling.
Oh, Laz, when he says he's twisted his arm, what he means is we've not physically restrained him from doing so. So he's going to carry on until.
But you're
stop
lucky
him.
I didn't link Sven with the Norway.
Inter Miami.
Okay?
Well.
Yeah. Right. Let's get back on track then. Into Miami update, everybody.
Smoke from over on that side of the table.
Phil Neville has promoted his son to the first
out
team
at
Into Miami.
He has.
I'm giving you the nod, son.
Go both barrels. what? I mean, that's...
Be like your uncle, your dad.
Oh, dear. Harvey Neville travelled with the team for their final game of the season early this month. And now he's officially in the first team. After Neville axed 10 players. Neville left behind Beckham's son Romeo, who will continue to play in Inter Miami's feeder team. What do we think of this then, Lars? How can you add some seriousness to this chat?
Lars has got an axe to grind about Inter Miami's financial dealings, so I think you're probably going to go there.
Well, axed for 10 players. I mean, Inter Miami, for those who don't know, have been punished harshly this year. They've been handed a fine. And there's been a reduction in the sort of the money they're allowed to spend over the next couple of years. Because again, the MLS is MLS. I know we have American listeners. It's
don't
not
worry.
The MLS. It is MLS.
Yep.
Have very stringent financial controls, and Inter Miami broke them. Inter Miami spent quite a lot more money on player salaries than they were allowed to. The average MLS squad has three players who can pay whatever, and the rest of the squad is sort of mid-table League One wages. Pretty much. Basically, they circumvented these rules by just paying the players way too much.
Gonzalo Higuain's on $5.2 million a year.
Well, he's one of those three, so you can pay them whatever you want.
Yeah.
It's all good. So he'll be on more than the rest of the squad put together.
I mean, that's just mad.
Happy days for Gonzalo.
They were given the biggest fine in MLS history,
yes.
I believe.
Yes. Yeah. And because they had basically two more players who should have been designated players by how much they were earning.
Yeah.
And just across the board, there was too much money being paid. And the point I want to make is that when this is reported, it's say, oh, they're fined for breaching sort of financial regulations, blah, 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 blah. We need to use the right words occasionally for things in this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's Phil's fault.
No, it's cheating is what it is. Like, this is cheating.
Yeah.
And cheating is the word we should be using because when it's, oh, they've fallen foul of admin things. It's like, yeah, I guess. I mean, this is as much cheating, I would argue, as if they were doping or paying off referees, honestly.
People think that when you say that we're not using the word cheating... And so, do you think that's because Inter Miami finished fourth bottom in the Eastern Conference? They won 12 games from 34. They didn't qualify for the playoffs. So people are not that. Spent a load of money and it didn't work.
Unsuccessful at cheating. It's a very, very serious thing that they've done, and they've been duly punished for it. And you mentioned earlier that they've axed a lot of players because they have to now because they've had a huge fine and that'll curtail what they'll be able to spend over the next 2 years. So it's really set the project. I think, a little bit, and they're going to have to run it a lot smarter now than they have done so far.
Well, they've got the man at the helm to do that.
Well, I was going to say, you know, and I think people forget that all this turmoil going on and all this sort of naughty business, you know, it's poor old Fizzer that gets it in the neck for everybody.
That's true. To be fair, he's not had an easy job there.
Everyone should leave off old Fizzer. But Fizzer did say, after failing to qualify for the playoffs, I'd be lying if I said I didn't expect us to finish higher.
Do the voice properly.
I'd be lying if I said... He then went on to say, I honestly can't wait to attack next season as quickly as possible. We've got great plans. We've got great plans, Lars.
To be fair, Lars, listen.
Hang on, Luke's got to have his say.
You said your piece, right? And you've done a very good but earnest bit about Inter Miami. Right.
Let's hear the other side of the story.
Yeah. All I want to say is that I prefer the stuff we do about Fizzer.
You might prefer this then. Their superstar, Higuain, as you mentioned.
Yes.
Said, and he said this to Christian Vieri's Twitch channel, which is obviously where you do most of your communication with the media.
Which one's Phil again?
He said, I thought I would come here and play with a cigarette in my mouth, and instead, it is difficult.
At least
which
he
is
admits
a great,
it.
Great, great, great attitude from your superstar. It's a tough league. And I think this is something that the older stars from Europe find when they come over. It is not as easy as they think.
Andrea Pirlo was a perfect example of that for New York City FC.
Say what you want about the standards, but there are a lot of fit lads in that division who don't mind smashing into you, which I think a few have gone.
Do you remember when Andrea Pirlo, when everyone was just going mad? Because basically the whole football community...
It was just hanging around.
The whole football community realised that Andrea Pirlo was going to retire.
Yeah.
And so they were like, oh no, we probably haven't given him as much credit as we should have done. So people just went way over the top. I think he'd be playing like 10-yard square passes in the MLS, and people would be going, look, typical PLO.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Yeah. Found the space.
Yeah.
And on that right back, he's kind of standing around in the middle, not moving much. It's like, no, exactly. He's reading the game.
Exactly.
Look at him reading.
Exactly.
He's reading the game going, I don't fancy this, I'll stay back.
Yeah, exactly. I wish I was at my vineyard.
Well, we have to finish by saying this, gentlemen, that however desperate the situation gets at Inter Miami, it can't be worse than Kavala FC in the Greek second tier. Because according to reports, they will play their next game with a squad of kickboxers and basketball players as they can't register any professional footballers. So if you fancy a game.
That's a great I was thinking about this. It's a great combination of other sports intake.
Yeah.
Because you've got the toughness of the kickboxing.
Yeah.
You've got the athletic ability.
Well, the ball handling. So surely a basketball player going in goal. Yeah. Kickboxer on by kicks.
Well, I mean, that's very niche. What I'm saying is they're not going to get bullied, the kickboxers.
No.
And the basketball players are going up and down. You hear people watching football going, God, it's like a game of basketball, this, because it's attack, you attack, we attack, you attack. Yeah. It's a lot of transferable skills. And I think, for the record, and I do watch a lot of the Greek second tier,
as you know.
Kavala are destined to win this next game. I'll be stunned if they don't.
All eyes on them.
Yeah.
And into Miami next year, of course, because... You know, they can't wait to attack.
Maybe they should get the kickboxers involved.
Maybe they should.
Do you know who should get the kickboxers involved? Dynamo Brest's women's team,
right?
Who are currently bottom of the Belarusian Women's League, having won one goal all year, but they have a goal difference of -224 in 27 games.
So Fizzer managed them before he managed
them. I think he did, yeah. That's how he got the job.
I think what we can all agree, Lars...
The Belarusian Women's League is savage.
No, is that we would like to see Phil Neville in a room with a load of kickboxers.
Absolutely right, everybody. You can get more from us on the Football Ramble Patreon, of course, if you enjoyed myself and Andy on the special bonus episode of The Teams of Our Lives, which we released on Sunday. Then there's almost a year's worth of them waiting for you on our Patreon feed. Just head over to patreon.com/footballramble to get involved. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Of course, on tomorrow's show, Kate, Jim and Pete will be in your ears.
A triple sub.
A triple sub.
A triple substitution.
A triple threat.
To try and rescue this nonsense. Last 15 minutes.
Look, we had
gone full Mourinho in there, Ramble Thomas. Yeah. Can't have any of this.
We took the Fizzer bullet for them.
We did.
I'm
happy to do so.
I'm always happy to do it.
If I'm going to take a bullet from Fizzer, I want to see what's in it first. See you later.
Yeah, thank you very much,
bye.
Luke Ball.
See ya.
Thank you, Lars Sivertsen.
Good fun.
Thank you very much, everybody. See you soon.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And on my way around the duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more,
and join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.